This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. U.S. Bank wants to know how you reward yourself, because they have cards that make every day more rewarding. Are you a points hoarder, cashback guru, low intro APR lover? With U.S. Bank, it's up to you, because they have the cards to fit your lifestyle. So earn more whether you're shopping at a gas station or a grocery store, even while planning a staycation. Learn more at usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
We are back and we are live. It is Fight IQ presented by RotoWire. And it is UFC 227 from Los Angeles, California. The main event is a rematch that we've all been looking forward to. The champ now is TJ Dillashaw taking on Cody Garbrandt in what I'm hoping is a fireworks-filled rematch and another rematch in our co-main event that I'm looking forward to just as much, actually. I know that's not a popular opinion, but it is Demetrius Johnson taking on Henry Cejudo. I don't think that one ends in the first round this time. We'll get to that later. I am your host, by the way, the Daily Fantasy Sniper. And with me, as always, are the co-hosts, the analysts for Fight IQ. It is Chris Olsen and Sun Tzu. Chris, how are you doing?
I'm doing especially great today because look what just came in the mail.
Your hat, baby. Where's your hat, Sean?
The RotoWire hat.
Chris just totally stole my thunder.
Oh no!
That is on.
We are all hatted up, baby.
Everyone now, stop sending Jake all these nasty emails and tweets. I know he was getting a lot of hate mail. Everything has come in the mail. Now we just got to work on shirts and hoodies.
Hoodie for sure. So I have to ask you guys, is being hatted up like in DFS the like equivalent of being G'd up if you were like, you know, a rap type gangster? Like,
I mean, I guess we should ask Jared Brooks that question.
Yeah, like, that's true. Yeah. It's true. This is the first time I've ever seen you with a hat, man. It's a good look.
Yeah, no, I'm not a hat guy. And with long hair, I'm sure it looks extra ridiculous. But
no, man. I think it's a good look for you. It actually makes you like appear like you know what you're talking about.
Ah, well, then I should wear the shirt too. I got a shirt back here.
What I need you to do then is that you have to take that hat off and we start talking about how Cub Swanson is going to win. But we will get there. And before we dive into the fight,
we'll get there.
That these podcast shows are brought to you by RotoWire MMA. Make sure and go to RotoWire, rotowire.com/free, 10-day free trial to all their premium content. They have season-long content, daily fantasy sports. You're also, now for MMA, they rolled out this week a lineup optimizer. It's in beta. It just has, I think it's for its projections. It's just using average fights, your average score per fight. But you have another optimizer out there, another tool that they have added. So make sure and check out all that stuff. And as always, I'm going to plug our Twitters because it's important to me, not Sun Tzu, but you can find Joe at Sun Tzu, at the DFS Sniper 1S. Chris is at Real Chris Olsen. Guys, are you excited for this card as I am? Because it's, I know people are disappointed with the fights that are on pay-per-view, like it really falls off, but top to bottom, I think it's going to be a fun card.
I'm sorry. Didn't know you were talking to me, but I think it's going to be a fun card too. And can you hear me?
Yeah, we got you.
All right. I think it's going to be a fun card too. I think there's a lot of good matchups here. I think there's a lot of good point opportunities and maybe some good under the radar point opportunities, because I think there are a couple fighters here that might get a finish who you wouldn't necessarily think of to getting a finish. So I think that could sneak up on some people and maybe get them some big points.
Now, as I've been building lineups, Joe, this card sets up for me as a GPP card a pretty damn good one on DraftKings. What do you think in terms of where's most your volume going to be? I know you're typically a GPP guy, but Does this card scream GPP for you as it does for me?
Well, you know, I think this card has great balance because you have two five-round fights. So if you pick the right fight to stack, this could actually be a pretty good cash card too. And I was actually having this conversation with Brett on the Alpha Pod that we did a little while ago, Brett Apley, that is, BB Bomb, where, you know, if I stack, I'm stacking not so much because I think I'm going to get a lot of points, but because I have a level of uncertainty as to the outcome, you know? And I think, you know, there's four fighters here in 2 5-round fights, and this could be a really good cash card if you pick the right fight to stack.
Do you need to pick one? I think the double stack is in play. Ooh, it's scary.
Here's the analysis behind the double stack, right? If you do the double stack, right, you're going to have $15,600 left. Are you confident enough that with $15,600?
It's more than that. I think it's 16-6. Or 17-6. 17-6. You have 8,800 left to fighter, right? Hang on. I'll plug it in right now.
All right. So that'd be right.
Check it.
Right?
8,800. 17-6.
What?
If you double stack, you get 8,800 left per fighter. You need to pick those two wins.
Wait, 16. Okay, you're right. So it's 32. It's 32-4, right? So you got 17-6. So can you find two fighters that are gonna win?
So the people in that range, and we'll talk about them later, but this is kind of good foreshadowing. In that range, starting from 9,100 to like 8,400, you have Hanato Moicano, Pollyanna Viana, Pedro Munhoz, Weili Zhang, Ricardo Ramos, Ricky Simon, Alex Perez.
And what if either one of those fights ends up in a quick finish and you get 225 out of the double stack? I mean, is that going to work for you?
If you get the other two right, it might. I'm not sure
stacking
I'm going
is
to
tough.
For me, that's one of the reasons why I said this card screams GPP. But we'll get into the breakdowns and let's start talking about some fights.
Yes.
And it's funny you mention our friend BB Bomb because his boy is up. Leading off the card, Marlon Chito Vera, 9,300, taking on Waleji Buren at 6,900. The line on this fight now, Marlon Vera is one of the biggest favorites on the card at 1 point. And yes, as of right now, Friday night, he is the biggest favorite on the card at minus 460. Waleji Buren's the underdog at plus 410. Marlon Vera coming off back-to-back losses. Douglas Silva, D'Andrade, John Lineker. Good fights. Clearly lost both of them. Waleji Buren is coming off a loss to Orlando D, which is really, really bad. The one thing Buren does is he looks to wrestle. I think Vera's bigger, stronger guy. I'm picking Vera to win the fight, but I have a hard time at 9,300 paying up for him, especially with Mighty Mouse in that range, Thiago Santos. It's hard for me to want to go there. And my problem with Vera is he gets very complacent in fights. If Buren gets a takedown, he might lay on his back. He doesn't really press the action on the feet. I know Buren was dropped by D and he popped back up, so Vera could get a finish. But I have enough worry here that I'm not sure how much Marlon Vera I'm going to play. Even though he's the biggest favorite on the card, he's really expensive for me. So, Chris, take us away on this first fight, Marlon Vera or Waleji Buren.
Yeah, you pretty much outlined my concerns. I mean, I think I'm gonna take from a slightly different perspective the fact that he sort of lays back is that I'm not even worried about what happens when Waleji Buren gets a takedown. I'm just worried about Chito Vera in general. I think I said this analyzing the last fight, but he just hangs back and gives away rounds so often, and then in the third round he almost like a switch flips and he goes, "Oh my God, now I have to fight." And he fights, but it's not good enough, and he drops decisions. I'm just really concerned about that complacency. I mean, I guess we both are in different areas. I mean, I think skill for skill, Vera is the better fighter. Clearly. He's going to be the bigger guy, as you mentioned. I like his kicking game when he decides that he wants to come forward and do it. But the problem is he's not even really a counter striker like Rolando Diaz. He just sits back and doesn't really do anything. So for 9,300, I agree with you completely. I'm not going to have much of him at all. I mean, his finishes are so weird. You have the third round head kick of Brad Pickett. Then you have the weird submission of Brian Keller when he when he locked up the Kimura and I think finished with an armbar. They're just kind of, you know, lightning strikes that, you know, there's nothing about Chito Vera that screams like consistent finisher to me. And I don't think he's going to get one here. So this is probably dog or pass for me across the board. And that means not a lot in this fight at all, because not a big Burn fan. So
now before I flip it to Joe, I think the other side of this fight is I think that I was hoping that people were going to be all off Waleji Buren. I've heard more and more people agree with me and Chris, you know, initial takes, which makes me think, could Marlon Vera be underowned in this spot? Joe, what are you thinking in this fight?
Look, I mean, I feel bad for, like, Waleji Buren. Like, he must feel like someone pissed in his Cheerios because, you know, he's training for a fight thinking he's going to go up against Kandari, who is...
Bahadur Khandre,
who he could actually out wrestle the Indian wrestler. You know, so, and now, then all of a sudden he finds out, well, no, I'm going to be fighting Chito Vera, training at Jackson Wank, solid competition. I think Vera could be a sneaky GPP play. I wouldn't say cash because anybody would rather pay the extra $100 and go up to DJ. But I think he could be a sneaky, low-owned GPP play. I mean, I have so far, I will share with our millions of listening viewers, listeners, that I have 80 lineups created so far, and I have Vera in 14. So I've got some exposure to Vera.
Well, we were talking somewhere else in a Slack chat, and I disagree with one of your exposures, and we'll get there. So I'm hoping they're going to have some adjustments coming along.
Yeah.
But before that, I sort of the fight wrong. I almost gave us the co-main event.
No.
We're not going to get there yet. Weilei Zhang, 8,700, taking on Danielle Taylor at 7,500. The odds on this fight, Weilei Zhang is the favorite, minus 255. It's been pretty consistent all week. The comeback on Danielle Taylor is plus 235. Danielle Taylor, I don't actually know what her nickname is, but it's Fantasy Black Hole. Do not play Danielle Taylor. If she beats you, she beats you. I don't see it. Weilei Zhang, on the other hand, is a newcomer who's beaten up Cans, but she does look good on tape. You know, you look good against Cans, but all the skills are there. She's aggressive. She throws volume. She's going to be bigger than Taylor, who should be an atom weight if the UFC had the division. I like Zhang a bunch here. I'm a little worried about the output because maybe Taylor runs the whole fight. But even with that, Zhang is the harder puncher, has the grappling. I like the newcomer part of this Chinese wave. I'm taking Weilei Zhang. Joe?
Yeah, I mean, look, that's my concern. Your concern is my concern, is that Taylor, you know, just spends the entire fight on her engine. And again, I would hope, like, this is one instance where I really would like the judge to get involved. To get involved and say, hey, you know, we need action, girls, you know, because I could see Taylor running and you know, the other fighter chasing her down. And look, I think she's a worthwhile play in GPP. I would, like, not touch this fight in cash. I don't see, like, even if Taylor wins, she's not going to score any points. And
I think Zhang could be cash viable.
No, only if she gets the finish, though. Do you really see her, you know, earning her, getting 10x on a decision? I don't see it.
If she grapples, she's going to have a grappling advantage. We've seen her take girls down, ground and pound. I know it's different competition. I don't think it's that. I'm not saying it's the best option, but I don't think it's that crazy.
I'm with you, though, on the pick.
Chris, are you locking in Weilei Zhang in cash?
Okay, so remember at the beginning when I said this might be a card for a finish for a fighter who never really gets finishes?
Don't,
I was talking about Danielle Taylor.
Take the hat off.
Listen. I was so confused when you started talking. I was wondering if we watched the same tape. This newcomer, all she does is stand in front and try to pepper with light shots until her opponent falls. And in her last fight, she got dropped like three times before the opponent pulled guard somehow, and she ended up winning with ground and pound. Yeah, this is a perfect style matchup for Danielle Taylor. All she does is keep her distance, move around, and throw big power shots. Well, she's gonna have somebody in there with her.
She's a 105er. Don't say big power ever again.
Excuse me. Look at that. She's gonna have somebody in there with her who's gonna stand right in front of her, not move her head, and just wing these wild shots. I guarantee you, she's gonna get hit hard with something at some point in this fight. There's no way, unless she fights totally different than what we've seen on tape. There's just no way that it won't happen. I'm not saying that Taylor is like a lock to win, because maybe in some universe she gets overwhelmed by the pressure, but Taylor is just such a more composed fighter. She actually has an idea of what she wants to do in the cage. I mean, look, am I saying go all in on Daniel Taylor? I'm not. But if you're looking for a GPP play that nobody's going to be on, that could finish, and I think has a better chance of than usual to finish, I think it's Daniel Taylor. She throws hard. I mean, I already mentioned everything. I won't go all the way through it. But, I mean, yeah, Daniel Taylor.
Okay, so listen, wait. Sean, I think, you know, I'm going to give some spoilers here, so people have to cover their ears, because Chris is obviously living in some sort of fantasy world. So there's a couple of things I want to spoil for him. You know, one of them is in Psycho, Anthony Perkins does play his mother. In Cinderella, the shoe does fit. And saying Danielle Taylor has power shots with a straight face, these are all fantasies.
For that division, you don't think she throws hard? Come on.
She's a 105. No. Danielle Taylor, this fight is -167 over 2.5 rounds. Fight Danielle Taylor to win inside the distance is +660.
Here's the one thing I will say in your defense, Chris, because I feel compelled to defend you at least a little bit.
Oh, thank you so much.
She will have I believe she works in the sheriff's office in the LA area. She will have plenty of friends and family cheering her on that could provide a bit of motivation for her. You know, being the local fighter, being able to, you know, not disrupt her training, having to travel. I will say that much, but I don't think this is a great fight, but I just, you know, saying that she's going to get a finish is a real bold.
Let's clarify. I said it's more probable than usual. To be clear, I didn't say go all in on Daniel Taylor. I said she could be a good, sharp, contrarian GPP play. But I'm shocked that you guys liked what you saw when you watched tape. I think we watched different tape. I'm not sure what you guys were looking at.
I think we have to remove the word sharp from contrarian, and then I could maybe get on the same page as you.
All right. Well, you know what I'm trying to say. Come on.
Danielle Taylor doesn't finish this fight unless a different Danielle Taylor shows up. We spent a lot of time on this fight. Let's just move on and agree to disagree. And I'm assuming we know Chris's hot take, and I'm going to vomit during that part. Joy of being the host, I can throw that in and move on to Alex Perez at 8,400, taking on Jose Shorty Torres at 7,800. Perez is the favorite at -140. The comeback on Jose Torres is +130. Torres coming in off that fight against Jared Brooks, where he was taken down a few times. And then on the last attempt, Brooks knocked himself out. That fight was on short notice for Jose Torres. At weigh-ins, he did look significantly smaller against Alex Perez. Perez gets a ton of takedowns. I think people are jumping on Perez because he gets takedowns. Brooks took down Torres. MMA math, Perez is going to take down Torres a bunch. I'm not so sure here. I think Torres is the better striker, hits with more power. I am a little worried about his chin because he gets dropped a lot. And he has enough wrestling. He's not an incompetent wrestler. Jared Brooks's wrestling is better than Alex Perez's. I think Torres does enough to keep this one on the feet. I'm still playing with exposures to this fight, but I like Torres as the pick here as the underdog at 7,800 and +130. Chris, you always pick the underdogs. Are you agreeing with me here, or are you going to just be different?
I'm so contrarian that I have to be contrarian now to you and say that, no, I'm taking Alex Perez. And I think, I mean, I agree with a lot of what you said. I do think Torres has more power. He's a good combination puncher. But I honestly don't think this read is all that dissimilar to the Jared Brooks fight. The wrestling you mentioned, but also the pace that Alex Perez is going to put on Jose Torres, I just think is going to be too much for him. I think that he's going to put the pace on him. He's going to find his takedowns. He's going to land his shots. And I think that Torres needs to be coming forward to execute his game, more or less. And I don't think Alex Perez is going to give that to him. I think the pace is going to be too much. The pressure is going to be too much. And, yeah, like I said, I don't see these reads as all that dissimilar. As long as Alex Perez doesn't knock himself out somewhere along the line, I think we're good to go. So I'm picking Alex Perez.
Joe, who do you have here?
Look, I expect Torres to do better in his second UFC fight. The other thing to consider is that when Torres got called up, and remember, his last fight against Brooks was short notice, he was training to fight at 145 because he already held two titles and was looking to go for a third title at 145. So he got the call saying, hey, guess what? Good news is you just got signed by the UFC. Bad news is we know you're training at 145, but this fight is going to happen at 125. So I get that Perez looked bigger than him at weigh-ins. However, not having to go through that severe of a weight cut, because I have to believe that if you're training to fight at 145, you're going to be walking around at least 145, if not higher. So having to cut all that weight, who knows what effect that had on him. This guy is a winner. All he does is win. So I'm going to have exposure to Perez, but I'm actually a little surprised that, and we'll talk about the line value on some of the other fights later. I'm surprised that this line is not flipped. I really thought this line might flip, and maybe it still will, but I like Shorty Torres here.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think the line is going to flip. I have a small bet on Shorty Torres at plus money. I'm going to hit the YouTube chat real quick. If you're listening to this episode after the fact and you subscribe to RotoWire MMA, we do these episodes Friday night, usually around 8 p.m. Eastern. So you can type live. We'll answer some questions. First couple questions are about line movement. We can save all these because they're about fights that are later, but line movement on Pollyanna Viana and J.J. Aldrich. Same with with Ricky Simone and Montel Jackson, how much chalk Montel will be. We will get to that. And my friend Vin says the Taylor fight is the bathroom break since Damian Maia isn't on the card. I don't know. Zhang.
Well, that's Damian Maia there.
Well, in terms of line movement, if you guys followed line movement last week for last week's card in Calgary, it went 3-1 line movement. So you got out of four fights where there was salary differential or salary benefit relative to line movement, it went 3-1. So we'll see what happens here, but that's not too bad.
Coming up next is a fight that I like out a lot for GPPs, and I think it's going to go under the radar. Matt Sales, 8,300, taking on Shaman Marais at 7,900. The line on this fight right now, it has flipped since the open. Shaman Marais is a -115 favorite. Matt Sales is the dog at +105. Looking at some other books, it's a pick'em straight 110, 110 at some places. So it depends on what book you look at. It is a pick'em slash fight. What I do think is interesting about this fight is the inside the distance prop and the over-under. So the under 2.5 rounds is +102. The fight does not go to decision is -130. I think there's a little value there. I think this fight's going to end inside the distance from what I've seen. Marais is the typical Brazilian kickboxer with power. Matt Sales trains at Alliance with Dominic Cruz, has some grappling, moves in pretty straight, is there to be hit by Marais, but also hits hard himself. I like this fight to finish, and I actually think that Sales is going to look to grapple here. And if he wins, I think it'll be ground and pound base for a finish. I'm just not so sure he won't get caught coming in. So I like this fight a lot for GPPs. My straight pick, though, I'm going to go with Matt Sales in this one. Sun Tzu?
This is interesting because are you guys familiar with the Oprah effect as it relates to marketing? Like, apparently anytime someone comes on Oprah that has a business, their business takes off. We're starting to see that with, like, Dominic Cruz and Alliance. Like, the big narrative on this fight is, Sales fights with Dominic Cruz. He fights with Dominic Cruz at Alliance in San Diego. And a couple of respected guys out there have, like, given Sales out as their, shout out to Kyle Marley, as their free play. I just don't see it. I mean, I'm going with the line value here. There has been a line move with Marais, whose first two fights in the UFC, welcome to the UFC. You get to fight Zabit and then Marlon Marais. This fight is materially easier than either one of those fights. I don't know, man. I would have some exposure to both sides of this fight, but picking a winner, I am definitely going with Marais here.
Chris, what are you doing with this fight?
Yeah, this is interesting to me. It's kind of close. To me, this is going to be a real question of who wins the pressure war, because they're both pressure fighters. They both like to advance, but only one guy can do that per fight. So we're going to have to see who takes the initiative. It could look a lot like Moraes' fight with Luis Palomino, where they just end up crazily swinging at each other. I wouldn't doubt that for a second, but you talked about Sales' grappling. I mean, he could try that. I mean, in his only loss, he got soundly out-grappled. I think that was two or three fights ago. So we'll have to see how that plays for him.
Shaman Moraes is not a grappler, though.
No, I get it, but I just wonder how willing he's going to be to play that game again, especially how much success he's had lately coming forward, throwing that right hand and just knocking dudes out. I think Moraes, I love his leg kicking game. It actually reminds me a little bit of Justin Gaethje, the way he chops at it and moves his head off the center line. I like that about him a lot. I don't know. I don't really see a deep enough game from Sales here to confidently pick him in this fight, although I do acknowledge that either one of these guys can finish each other. So I guess I'm going to have to be boring here and go with Joe and say that I'm going to have exposure to both. I think both can win. I think I'll be a little heavier on Moraes.
I'm not super confident in the pick, but I am very, it sounds like I'm more confident in that. I think this fight is really important for GPPs. I'm seeing a finish here whenever I play it out in my head. And even at their mid price, if there's any kind of volume or a knockdown, I think this fight is priced just outside of Cody and TJ. I think it's a good chance this fight ends up in the optimal lineup. So
I agree with you. And that's why, I mean, I referenced that Palomino fight. It was just a crazy war. And I think we could see that again. And I think if we see that here, I think one of these guys could definitely drop. So I don't often do this, but I actually think that's a nice read by you. I'll pay you a compliment. And I do think that this is a fight you should be looking at. Absolutely.
All right, next up, Ricardo Ramos, 8,600, taking on Kwon Ho Kang at 7,600. The line on this fight currently, Ramos is a -215 favorite. Kang is the underdog at +195. This fight is interesting because these guys are pretty similar in that they both have stand-up striking and a little bit of grappling. They're both fairly well-rounded. Ramos is the younger guy. Kang, though, was getting hit on the feet against Guido Canetti, and that's a big problem. I know he was off 3 years beforehand. I think Ramos' striking is better. I don't think Kang can get Ramos to the ground. I think Kang might be a better submission grappler, but I don't think he's going to have a chance to really use it in this fight. So I'm going with Ricardo Ramos. I was really high on him to start the week to win the fight. I still am, but on DraftKings, I'm starting to worry a little bit about how well he scores. Chris, how do you have this one pegged?
Yeah, well, I mirror your concerns. I think we saw Canetti have a lot of success just by coming forward and being aggressive, and I don't think that plays well in this fight for Kang, because I think that Ramos can do that. I also think that Ramos is probably a better grappler, and I would say probably better than we got the chance to see, because and that's a hobby fight. I think a lesser scrambler would have probably been submitted in that fight. I think that Hamas was doing really good work there. Zahabi was just able to keep up with him. I mean, I guess that's what happens when you're a super prospect and your brother is a great coach. I guess that happens. But I'm really excited to see Hamas exercise some more of his BJJ here. He stands a little bit upright, which I don't love, especially against the guy who hits as hard as Kang does. And is as big as he is, but he had the layoff, and then he doesn't look great against Canetti, and now he's in there against a tricky good BJJ fighter who's got some good striking of his own. I think I have to pick Ramos here.
Joe, where do you have this one?
So, Ramos actually did this camp at Alpha Male. Alpha Male is not generally known as a striking camp, so I think he already brings a striking edge into this fight. I'm not looking for any vast improvements in striking. If anything, his wrestling/grappling, you know, would improve based on time spent at Alpha Male. Plus, he's a very young fighter. I believe he's only 23 or 24. Kang did have the military service. They threw him a big softball when he went up against Canetti. I actually like this as a fight to target. This is the only three-round fight other than Santos Holland that where they set the over under as 1.5 rounds versus 2.5 rounds. And it actually, there's been line pressure against this fight finishing inside the distance with I don't necessarily agree with. I do think we're going to get a finish here. If it does go to decision, I don't think it's going to be a great scoring fight because I think these guys can neutralize each other. But I am going to, my initial pick was Kang, and I guess I'll stay with Kang here, but it's a fight, like to give you an example, I have 24% exposure to Hamos and 22% exposure to Kang in the lineups that I've created so far. So I like this fight to target. I like it fairly equally. I think exposure to the fight is a lot more than picking a winner, is a lot more important than picking a winner, but gun to my head, I'll go with Kang.
All right, speaking of line value, we have Ricky Simone, 8,500, taking on Montel Jackson at 7,700. Montel Jackson is now the favorite, minus 120, taking on Ricky Simone at plus 110. Jackson coming off the Dana White Tuesday Night Contender Series, long guy, really athletic, pretty explosive, has some grappling. Weigh-ins looks longer and bigger than Ricky Simone. Simone is coming off of a fight against Mirab Divashvili where he was handed a win. I don't think Divashvili was out. Came on late. Divashvili put on an insane pace, and Simone didn't fade to his credit, but he was taken down a bunch. Overall, just stylistically, I think Jackson's going to be in this one. I think he can play at range. I think those long limbs and his grappling will have some success here. We've seen Simone can be taken down. I like Montel Jackson. I like the line movement. I agree with it. I think he's a play in cash if he fits there. I think he's going to be pretty chalky, though. I think this is one of our questions. How chalky do you think Montel Jackson is? I'm going to, and I'm not the ownership expert, so I'll let these guys both touch on it well. My gut feeling right now is he's probably going to be around 35-40% in most contests at this line value. So, Joe, what do you think about the fight and the line movement and ownership?
Yeah, so honestly, I wasn't really focused too much on this fight prior to the line movement. You know, I was at the fight in Atlantic City when, you know, Simon got that. We didn't know what was going on at the end of the fight. We had assumed that Dishvali won the decision. And then, you know, when we found out that Simon won by submission, we were all like freaking out. So I remember I was at that fight. It was an interesting fight. I think Simon could be, look, you got a guy making a debut who essentially flipped the line against a guy who has fought arguably better competition. The line movement makes it tough. This is going to be a strange statement, but I'm probably going to have more exposure. Not probably. I will have more exposure to Jackson, but my pick to win the fight is Simon.
Chris, how do you have this one?
Yeah, I don't know if this fight's going to be particularly chalky because I don't know if people aren't just going to sort of bypass this. I Montel Jackson, he got his finish in the third round of the Contender Series, I think. Right?
There's a lot. There's a lot of odds-based players, and there's
no. I know that there are, but I also think that we have these fights sometimes where there's a lot of casual players too, and so they're not necessarily they're looking for guys they know or guys who have finishes. I mean, this is a guy who we just saw at the Contender Series. He had a good fight, but it was muddled up a little bit by all the fouls and whatnot. I'm not really getting a strong sense of a chalky ownership, but you might be right. He could be, in all fairness.
Based on line value, Chris, he's going to be very chalky.
No, I get it. But, all right, we'll see. But anyway, as far as my read on the fight goes, I basically agree that, Montel's the pick here. I think, like you guys covered it, the length, the grappling. I think they said in the Contender Series he was – like an Olympic hopeful or something. So that gives me, a good feeling. He's definitely strong. We saw that in the Contender Series fight. Ricky Simone, I wouldn't go past him all the way just because his style plays pretty well for DraftKings in that He's a guy who likes to back you up with strikes and then go get in for takedowns, and he'll chain wrestle over and over and over again if you let him. You know, that fight with Diashvili, that guy's a nightmare for anybody just because of the pace he puts on. And, you know, Simon couldn't really get anything going in that fight prior to, you know, the weird finish. But I attribute that to the opponent more so than, you know, a failing from Ricky Simone. And I think that he's going to have a better opportunity to get takedowns here on Montel if he so chooses, and I think he will. So the pick here is Montel, but don't speed through Ricky Simone because I think he's got the kind of style here that could generate points.
All right, next up, a fight that I'm going to do some foreshadowing. Here's my hot take right here. Pedro Munhoz, 8,800, taking on Brett Johns at 7,400. Pedro Munhoz is the favorite, minus 210. Brett Johns is the underdog at plus 190. Everyone is off of Brett Johns because he was handled by Aljamain Sterling, who is, you know, a borderline top five guy in that division. Pedro Munhoz, I believe his last fight was a split decision against John Dodson, the loss, which even I can't hold that against him, though I never have been or will be a Pedro Munhoz fan. It's hard to look good against John Dodson. And before that, he subbed Rob Font. Damian Stasiak, by the way, that is another guy that Pedro Munhoz fought, and that was a fight for a little while. Stasiak, I believe, got a takedown. Look, Brett Johns is going to try and grapple you over and over and over again. What we all seem to forget, and I did too, is that Aljamain Sterling has an NCAA wrestling background. That posed a real problem, and Johns couldn't grapple. Yes, he was exposed as a little one-dimensional. And he probably still is. You can't improve that much. But Pedro Munhoz, to me, is submission or bust. I don't think he's going to be able to piece up Brett Johns as Brett Johns is going to pressure forward. I think it's going to be a grappling match. My one concern is that Munhoz catches him with that nasty, nasty guillotine. I don't like to rely on a guy who's sub or bust. I love a guy who's going to look for takedowns over and over again. I think this fight is closer than plus 190, minus 210. I don't think Munhoz is that good. I've been saying it for fights and fights and fights, and I'm going to keep trusting with what I see. Maybe I'm wrong here, but I like Brett Johns a ton. I think he goes out and wrestle you-know-what Pedro Munhoz for three rounds. We'll get to my hot take later because I'm not just going to pick Brett Johns. I'll go a little more specific, but I like Brett Johns. He's one of my favorite underdog plays of the week. I'll send it to Chris first to tell me why I'm insane.
Well, I wish I could. I think that'll come later. But for this, I actually agree with you. I think I think that
the hat is making him smarter.
What's that?
The hat is making him smarter.
I know, right? Pull it down. Maybe it'll seep in even further. But I think that like a lot of fighters.
Like
a lot of fighters that we see who have a really good guillotine, they use that in substitution for their takedown defense because that's where they want the fight so they can finish it. So I think that might make the takedowns a little easier for Johns, but all he's got to do is he's got to move to side control. He's got to do what he can do to not get caught in that guillotine, which is easier said than done. But, I mean, look. The Rob Font and Munhoz has a great guillotine. I'm not saying he doesn't, but the Rob Font sub was a club first. So I mean it's not like you know, that was a panic takedown that he converted to it. So if they're just fighting and Brett Johns shoots for takedowns, is he just gonna be able to sub him dry like that without you know, any like damage or anything? I kind of doubt that for a guy who's been doing. Who, you know, relies on that solely for his offense. I think they're gonna have that in their game plan that they have to deal with this. I also think that on the feet, Brett Johns is the one who's gonna be coming forward. I think he's gonna be a little bit quicker. And I kinda like him almost everywhere, to be honest, except, you know, for the sub on the ground. But I think as much as it horrifies me, I'm gonna have to agree with Sean here. And say that I like Brett Johns here, and I think he could score pretty highly. We already saw that in, you know, the fight with Quan O'Quack. We know how well he can do when he's chaining those takedowns together. We know how big he can score, and I think he's got a chance to do that here.
our regular listeners chiming in. Dave LB says this is a bad matchup for Johns, and that Font is a way better striker than Johns. Agree with Font is a better striker than Johns. Disagree. This is a bad matchup. The bad matchup is a wrestler, another counter wrestler, specifically an NCAA wrestler, because we saw that he can't handle that. Buenos' grappling is a submission. He just needs to avoid the sub. Johns has slick jiu-jitsu. We saw him submit Joe Soto with a calf slicer. Like, he's no BJJ slouch. Live to the sub, but I don't think he's going to. Garrett, by the way, says everyone's game plan versus Munoz now is watch your neck, as it should be, but I don't think that's going to deter Johns from looking for the takedowns. Joe?
Look, I agree with everything you guys said about Johns. I think he's live. I think you should have exposure to him on DK, especially in mass entry GPPs, though I'm going to pick Munoz to win the fight.
My God.
Continue. I mean, elaborate
that's,
a little bit.
That's it. I mean, you guys already gave all the analysis. I mean, I think – I don't know that John – look, I would like to think that I haven't seen a lot of improvement in Munoz's striking. However, I don't think Johns is a great striker either. So let's call that even. I see Munoz being able to, you know, impose his will on Johns. Although, look, it wouldn't. I see this as a lot closer than the line. Let's put it that way. I see this as a lot closer than the line. Everybody has that same strategy, watch your neck, against Munoz, yet he still somehow manages to get the submissions. So do we really think Johns has got that much better fight IQ than, you know, Rob Font, than, you know, other guys that got caught in that choke? I don't necessarily think so. He's an MMA lab guy, comes from a good camp. The other thing, and someone, and I can't remember who, it might have been Kelton, but commented that, you know, John still does not have a U.S. camp. He's still doing all his training in the U.K. or his local camp. I'd like to see him get a camp in the U.S. I think he's a good fighter. He's got potential. I just think this is a little bit too much of a tough test for him.
All right, next up, Thiago Santos, 9,200, taking on Kevin Holland at 7,000. There's huge line in this fight. Thiago Santos, -325 favorite. The comeback on Holland, +295. But this fight is -420 to end inside the distance. I love this fight in GPP. Santos hits hard. That left kick is a thing of just pure destruction. Whereas Holland, another Dana White Tuesday Night Contender Series guy, flashy striker, hits with power. And we've seen Santos just no-show before. He lost to Eric Spicely. He lost to Eric Spicely. I'm not sure how many times I could say that before it resonates. I know it's just one loss, but it's a big one. And he was knocked out three and a half months ago by David Branch. That's a pretty quick turnaround. I'm still picking Thiago Santos. I think he's better, but I'm going to be overweight to the field on Kevin Holland. I think people are skipping by him. -420 to end inside the distance. Sign me up for a healthy amount of Kevin Holland. I think someone's going to sleep in the first round here. We'll start with Joe for this one because I know that I have infinitely more Kevin Holland than you right now.
Yeah, well, if you have more than zero, you certainly do. not to say that I won't add a lineup or two with Holland, but
please,
I like this fight. I like this fight everywhere for Santos. Look, there's narratives. I mean, he knows he can't lose two fights in a row. He looked pretty jacked at weigh-ins. You know, I don't understand why he's not the highest favorite on the card. He's got the single best inside the distance prop. I would actually argue that the line isn't wide enough on this fight. I mean, Holland wasn't even given a contract in the Dana White's Contender Series, and he was actually lobbed a softball for his fight. Like, he was lobbed a fighter that was older, that had, you know, that wasn't nearly as talented as him, and he couldn't finish the guy, didn't get a contract, you know, lost to, who did he lose to? Melander, before Melander moved down to welterweight. I I don't know, man. I just think everything's aligned here in Santos's favor. Not to say that it, you know, look, he can't get caught. He could get caught. Of course he got caught. He can get caught. I like this fight everywhere. I don't understand why it's not, why Santos is not the biggest line favorite on the card. He should be. But I think you lock and load with Santos, and if Holland beats you, so be it.
Chris, how do you have this one?
Okay, a couple things here about Thiago Santos. I think Branch, and this is what I was worried about for him in that fight. I think Branch pretty much, you know, not wrote the book because it was already there, but maybe exposed the book, took it off the shelf. Where if you pressure and crowd Thiago Santos, his basic defense is just to throw really hard hooks at you, hoping you'll go away. And Branch didn't and caught him. I don't think Kevin Holland can do that to him on the feet. First of all, I don't think he's that dedicated of a pressure fighter.
No, not at all.
Huh?
Not at all.
No, I don't think he's that dedicated of a pressure fighter. And I also wonder, you know, if the other thing that he can do, we saw in his Bellator fights. I'm wondering if Holland is going to try to take this to the ground. He's a pretty dedicated submission artist. We saw him win his Bellator fight that way. He's got a number of submissions on the record. He doesn't do much in the way of takedowns from what I've seen. And we did see Thiago Santos get a sweep on Anthony Smith. That's Anthony Smith, I understand. But I'm kind of curious to see what will happen if this fight goes to the ground. I wonder if Holland will take that path. I think he should. I think if this stays on the feet for any length of time, he's going to be pretty much dead. I don't think he's going to be able to handle the explosiveness of Thiago Santos. I don't think he's much of a counterpuncher. So I think, you know, he can always catch him with a shot. He's a big, powerful guy. But I'll be very interested to see if Holland game plans to wrestle here. If not, I got to take Santos by knock.
And who is that guy he beat at Bellator?
His name was Tegan Dooley.
Okay. And where is Tegan Dooley right now?
I can't answer that question for you.
I think he's tending bar. You know,
he's got a 4-1 professional record, so that might tell you.
He's a range fighter, Holland. Yeah. I'd be shocked if he tried to take it down. He's going to try to fight at range, and Santos is going to light him up with kicks. Holland's going to get frustrated, and Santos is going to just finish him like a beard.
Good luck. You are relying on Thiago Santos to show up. So good luck with that. He should win, but I think there's a very real possibility he pukes all over himself.
Ooh. And loses two in a row? That's going to permanently derail any hope he has at moving up in middleweight. Yep. If he loses two in a row.
Absolutely. Hasn't he lost two in a row before?
Maybe.
Yeah, absolutely has. Yeah, he lost. The Eric Spicely fight where he folded was coming off of a loss to Gegard Mousasi.
Yeah. That was a tough loss.
That he took on, that was a quick turnaround too. It's some more mirroring for you. There's a narrative I just kind of uncovered. For what it's worth, Santos should win. I just don't trust the guy. Next up, Pollyanna Viana, 8,900, taking on J.J. Aldrich at 7,300. Line movement that I disagree with. Aldrich is now only the underdog at +120. Pollyanna Viana is -130. Look, I know Pollyanna Viana beat Maya Stevenson last time out. I get it. J.J. Aldrich is the better range fighter. Okay, sure. I think even if Aldrich wins and you want to pick her, I think she's pretty bad. Like, she might end up in the nuts lineup. She is not a volume striker. She would stay at range and hit Viana. I think Viana can get her down. And once this fight's on the ground, I think Viana's going to tear through her. And honestly, at -130, I think there's some value there in Viana for a bet. This opened up at -210 and is closed steadily. I disagree with the line now. I think Aldrich becomes a little chalkier. I don't think she scores very highly in a win. So for me, I like Pollyanna Viana to just have her way on the ground with J.J. Aldrich. Joe, you're the women's MMA whisperer. I heard a giggle because I think you're on Aldrich.
No, I mean, okay. That's not a line movement. That is not going to occur from guys betting $5 and $10 on the fight. Someone dropped a significant amount of money on JJ here to cause that kind of line movement. Because I may be incorrect, but didn't the line actually get wider after opening initially?
I have the history. Hang on.
Yeah.
It did. It was all the way at minus 325.
Yes, exactly. She was a 3-1. So to go from 320 to one minus 140 means someone or some buddies threw a significant amount of money down on JJ here.
It was pretty steady. Like, it wasn't all at once, except it did make from 200 to 150, it made a big jump. But from there, it was slowly ticking all week.
Look, I mean, I get that it's women's MMA, and it doesn't take the same amount of money to move lines in MMA as it does in other sports. But I still have to believe that if not a complete steady stream of money coming in. Now, I had some Aldridge before the line movement, and I added a little bit to my Aldridge position. Look, I think Vienna is worth – I think she's worth a play. I definitely think that, you know, I don't see JJ getting a finish. I like the salary relief. I mean, you're getting 7.3K at you know, plus 120 is pretty attractive. And I think her ownership is going to, you know, all the odds players are going to move. But I think, you know, I don't love this fight to target, but I think you should have some shares of each, but I'm going to be much higher weighted to JJ.
Chris, what do you got in this fight?
Well, I understand the line movement because Paula Viana can't strike, and she's not really a wrestler, although she does have some takedowns against the fence, but it's not like she's a dedicated wrestler. JJ Aldridge is a boxer who keeps range. That's going to help her out in this fight.
Wait, I think, Chris, you're the technical guy, so why don't you talk about the types of takedowns that Pollyanna goes for?
Well, the one that she got against Maya Stevenson was just sort of an against-the-fence trip. I haven't really seen anything like a double leg or anything reactive. I don't think she has anything like that.
It's just it's like power judo throws. I mean, yeah, it's nothing technical about her takedowns.
Yeah, no, I think you're right about that. And I think, look, Aldridge is going to keep range. She's obviously the more technical striker. I think if she can circle out, which I think she can, and she can keep her range, I think she can tag her up. Now, I do agree that I don't think it's likely that she gets a finish. So what we have to deal with here, if we like Aldridge, is you got 15 minutes to stay on your feet. You know, and in 15 minutes, if all you need is one, and I don't know that all she needs is one, but I'm not willing to take the chance that, although, you know, Maya Stevenson got out of that first armbar that Vienna put her in. I mean, that is worth noting. But let's just say, for the sake of argument, that she only needs one, okay? So we got 15 minutes to fade one takedown. I don't like those odds that much. So in GPP, you definitely need some Vienna in case she gets a quick finish. But I like Aldridge to win the fight too. I don't know how well she scores. I think it's 73. It's not inconceivable that she scores like 75 to 78, which I think will be absolutely fine. So yeah, this is a fight where I think you need exposure to both. But as far as, you know, who am I picking for the fight? I'm going to go with Aldridge here because I can't pick somebody, you know, I can't pick a jiu-jitsu person with no striking who doesn't really have any wrestling. So there you go.
I mean, I picked Mackenzie Dern against Amanda Bobby Cooper, and that worked out.
Well, because she showed off her overhand right.
Sorry. The way you described that at the very end, I'm like, wait, I picked a fighter like that, women's MMA. It's still women's MMA.
And I know, and you guys were all saying, oh, she's going to knock her down first with something hard. That's all what you guys were all saying. I remember it.
Yeah, pretty much. Moving on, Hanato Maekano, 9,100, taking on Cub Swanson at 7,100. This line has it opened pretty wide. I believe it stayed there. Maekano is a minus 295 favorite. The comeback on Cub, plus 265. Look, I'll let Chris tell you why Cub's going to knock out Hanato Maekano. I'm going to tell you that Maekano is the better striker. He outstruck a really good guy in Calvin Kattar last time out. He was beating Brian Ortega until in the third round he got caught with the submission. That's legit. He beat Jeremy Stevens. He had a couple takedowns in that fight. Look, overall, Moicano's a better striker than Cub. He hits harder. He's more liable to finish. The only way Cub wins this fight, the only thing Cub has going for him in this fight, is an unorthodox striking style. He's prone to get hit. I don't think Hanato Maekano is going to fight a silly fight and get caught here. I think he's pretty much better everywhere. I think Cub is on his way out. Chris, we'll start with you. Why is Cub Swanson, why is this the fight that starts his 5-fight winning streak on his way to the title?
Well, first of all, I need to say that I contacted Twitter Terms of Service for all the abuse I'm getting from these two for picking Cub in that fight. So, guys, expect an email very soon. But, I think that Cub is going to do what you need to do to beat Moicano, which we haven't really seen anybody do yet, at least in my opinion, which is brawl him. When you try to brawl Ignatiu Moicano, he does this thing as a counter-strike to try to push you away. It almost reminds me of Thiago Santos. And I think that Cub is going to keep that pressure. He's going to dart in with hard strikes, and he's going to take the fight to him. I think, look, and I want to be clear that I'm not saying Ignatiu Moicano can't win this fight. I think he can. I like him. He's a counter-striker. He's got good hard leg kicks. He's good at circling off the cage. He's good at avoiding strikes, but we haven't really seen someone take a fight right to him yet. And I think that, I think that Cub's going to do that. And I think Cub's going to stay on him. I think Cub's not going to give him all the space he needs to circle out, which is the way he beat Stevens, which is the way he if you remember, Qatar looked pretty good in the opening minutes of that fight. And it's because he was coming forward, and it's because he was pressuring. After that, Moicano kind of got his bearings. I think the boxer in Qatar took over, and he stayed at range, and that's not how you want to fight Ignatiu Moicano, in my opinion. I think Cub is going to take the fight to him. I think he's going to hit him hard. Maybe Moicano hits a little harder, but I think Cub still hits plenty hard. And I like him for a win here, maybe a finish. I'm seeing people say he needs one, but I don't know if he needs one. I think he can keep a pressure game for three rounds, and that's what I'm betting on. So there you go.
Wow.
Joe, what do you got?
Well, that breeze that just came in was Moicano breathing a sigh of relief, knowing that Chris said he's got a remote possibility of winning the fight. Who is more technical, Adam Lobov or Renato Moicano? It's not even close. The amount of strikes that Cub Swanson took from Adam Lobov. Now, Moicano is a slow starter. Yes, I will say he's a slow starter. Great. The other, you want narrative? Cub is local. Apparently, he spent $26,000 on tickets for families and friends to come watch him. Now, I don't view that as a positive. I view that as a major fight week distraction. When you've got so much family coming in that you just spent $26,000 on tickets, my take is that he's going to have a lot of help carrying him out of the ring with all those people he's got at the fight. I see a late finish by Moicano, late second round, third round maybe. This is a difficult fight for me on DK, though, because you got Moicano at 9.1K. I think the likelihood of a finish is higher with Santos. I just don't know if Moicano is going to get enough points to earn his salary. So I'm going with Moicano here. Easy, easy, easy. But I just don't know. I think you should have some shares. I just don't know what to do, with him on DraftKings.
All right. Co-main event time. Henry Cejudo, 6,800, taking on Demetrius Mighty Mouse Johnson at 9,400. The line on this one, Mighty Mouse is -430. The comeback on Cejudo, +380. Look, you can't pick against Demetrius Johnson when you go skill for skill. He's faster. He can outstrike Cejudo. You see him move in and out. You finished him with a knee on the inside last time. I just have a funny feeling that I think this fight is closer than the line. You can't expect a flash knockout at 125 again. Cejudo has been making improvements. He is a Golden Glove boxer before. He's shown off his karate style. He can grapple. I know he took down Demetrius, and Demetrius popped right back up in the first fight. But over five rounds, if he gets a few of those, we saw Tim Elliott control Demetrius Johnson. Cejudo can do that. I think this fight is closer. I'm still picking Mighty Mouse here. I think overall the volume is going to be too much. I think this is a good fight to stack. I think this is the better fight to stack of the two, except for the explosive uncertainty in the first one. I think this one is more stackable. Still going to go with Mighty Mouse, but I will have some shares of Cejudo just because I gave my quick technical breakdown, but I just have a funny feeling on this one. Like in Los Angeles, Henry Cejudo, 11 title defenses, I think it is, for Demetrius. God, this is something just feels off here to me. And there's no technical breakdown behind that. So technique-wise, Johnson, my gut is saying Cejudo for some reason. And maybe that's just because I know it's MMA and when it, this long of a winning streak. At some point, something's going to happen. So, Chris, who do you have here?
Well, I think that every DJ fight for the past five or six, we've had this, right? Where it's, oh, he might do it. He might do it. Well, you know, he might. And then, no, he doesn't do it. Look.
No, wait. I disagree with that. The last time I thought that was Cejudo the first time.
No, he's not talking about you. He's not saying you.
Okay.
He's making a general statement.
People thought Wilson Hayes was going to beat Demetrius Johnson.
There's always a little of that. Like they outline the attributes and they go, well, I don't know. But
at least I'm going with an Olympian. Jesus.
Well, yeah, no, I don't begrudge you that. I'm just saying that I think it seeps into our unconscious that you know, it would be exciting and that's what we want to happen. So, but that might not be you specifically. I have to say that I'm not so sure that Cejudo will control Demetrius, because the one takedown he got in that first fight, we didn't see him get controlled there.
One time.
I know, but if he's going to control him, he's got to control him. But I think DJ is just really good at scrambling. I think he's getting better at it too. We saw him not be able to be controlled at all by Ray Borg and out-scramble Ray Borg pretty much every single time. You covered it. I mean, the in and out movement, the strikes from different angles every time, the work in the clinch, which Cejudo is going to have to enter into at some point, you know, if he wants those takedowns, it's just not going to work out well for him. I mean, let's say he goes in and Demetrius stuffs the initial shot, right? And now he's right back to where he was in the first fight, that got him knocked out. I mean, unless he's shown some improvements in that area, I think that Cejudo probably should have waited on this fight, maybe three or four more. I know maybe DJ doesn't have that long in the division, but I think this is a little too soon for him. I don't think he's drastically improved enough. I know he showed off some better striking recently, but when he was up against Sergio Pettis and couldn't outstrike him, what happened? He just became the wrestler again. So if that's all he has coming back, I'm not saying it's nothing, of course, because it's Olympic level, but I just don't know if it's going to be enough. I don't know if Cejudo is going to be able to hold him down. And if he can't, I just think it's going to be DJ doing what DJ does. So I'm going with Mighty Mouse. You're muted.
John, you're muted.
I got you. Sorry about that, guys. Yeah. That's some background noise going on. I was trying to be considerate. Joe, I think we know the technical breakdown of this fight now. How are we approaching it on DraftKings?
Wait, so you guys are not, believers in the new age camp that Henry Cejudo had? I mean, I heard some 90-year-old Navajo woman blew like smoke all over his body and
yeah,
created tingles.
He's doing some weird kind of spiritual whatever.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's got talisman and all kinds of cool things. And, you know, look, unless Cejudo can hurt Demetrius Johnson with his hair, I don't really see any difference in the outcome of this fight versus the last fight. The issue I have here is, absent a lot of passes and wrestling moves, there is some caution. DJ has been a scoring machine, but that's usually based on ground points, not so much on stand-up significant strikes. So I just don't know. I mean, I think he's a good play for cash. I think he could be a good play in GPPs, but if you're going to play Demetrius Johnson in GPPs, you're going to have to get a dog or two that comes up big in your lineups, because he's just so damn expensive, and you got to get Santos in your lineups as well. So I think he's challenging to use in GPPs unless you really are confident in a dog or two. But I like him for the win going away.
All right, let's move on to the main event. TJ Dillashaw, 8,200, taking on Cody Garbrandt, 8,000. Big rematch. The line on this fight, it's been a pick'em. TJ's a small favorite now, -120, Garbrandt +110 on Five Dimes. Look, this fight is as close as possibly could be. It's an all-in situation for me on DraftKings. That first fight, if it had five more seconds to it, I think that Cody finishes TJ. Overall, I think TJ is the more complete fighter, uses his angles better, has some wrestling. I think Cody has some we haven't seen. I just think TJ's is better, so I won't totally discount Cody on the ground. Overall, I like the way TJ fights, and Cody just has unlimited power. Which way it goes, who knows come fight day. If the co-main wasn't on this card, I'd say stack this fight. You know, I think it's stackable. The double stack you could run, but as we outlined in the open, then you really better be accurate later. If I'm going for a fight pick, I'll go with Dillashaw for the reasons I mentioned, just a more complete game. I think Cody's also putting a lot of pressure on himself. So I'll take TJ Dillashaw, but I'll have plenty of both sides. Joe?
So when you have a fight where both fighters are just a little bit of an asshole, you know, who's the less of an asshole? Probably TJ.
With I don't know. It's hard to tell.
With that said, there is a bit of a narrative with, I'm sure it's pretty, anybody who's kind of been following this knows that, you know, Cody had back issues. The reason he took the last fight was financially motivated. With that said, I don't know how big an issue it was, but he almost did finish TJ. I think you need to have exposure to this fight. The one concern I have is that if for some reason this does go to a decision, I don't know that either fighter will be optimal lineup GPP. I think we do need a finish in this fight for the fighter to be in the optimal lineup, or the nuts, as we like to say. I actually am picking TJ to win, but at last look, I actually had a higher percentage of Cody simply because the $200 savings opened up more possibilities in terms of combinations that I wanted to play. So even though I like TJ to win the fight, you know, as evidenced by how close I feel it is, I actually have a higher percentage of Cody in my mass entry GPP lineups. But TJ is the pick, but you do need exposure to this fight.
Chris, wrap us up.
Yeah, I agree that it's close, but I mean, just the deciding factor for me is who's the better all-around fighter. And for me, that's TJ Dillashaw the whole way. And that's why I went with TJ the first time. Because to me, unless TJ had some kind of glaring weakness like his chin or his gas tank, which he doesn't have either of those problems, I just don't see how you don't go with the better fighter. Sure, Cody has a little bit more power, but TJ's power is fine. You know, so I mean, that's not really a huge advantage in my opinion. I think that TJ just has more ways to win. He's got more things that Garbrandt's going to have to think about. He can try to get the wrestling going. He, can do his Dominic Cruz-esque coming in at angle striking. And look, can he get caught? Absolutely, he can get caught. But if you're asking me who the better fighter is, who I think is going to win, it could be a little sticky again like the first fight, but I expect TJ to come through it.
Hot take time.
It is time for the hot takes, and I will – I alluded to mine earlier, so you guys can have a couple extra seconds. I'm just deciding how many. We'll go Brett Johns gets a decision win over Pedro Munhoz, securing. You know, this is probably a bit high, but it's a hot take. Securing 8 takedowns, scoring at least 95 points.
I think that's doable, actually. I want you to go hotter than that.
Well, my hot take is despite the massive – not massive, despite the plus money on Moicano inside the distance, I would go against the current line right now and take a stab and a bet on Moicano inside the distance.
Chris?
Blasphemy. Okay. Boom goes the dynamite. Danielle Taylor gets her first finish inside the octagon.
By a body kick?
Body kick.
I can't.
I'll spice it up. Just spice it up.
God, I need a 3-week break from this. So this is our last episode for three weeks.
Until Lincoln,
make sure you guys subscribe to the channel, rotowire.com/free, all that good stuff. Hope you enjoy your contest. Enjoy your Saturday night. A fun card from Los Angeles.
And two of the three of us are going to actually be watching the fights together tomorrow. One could not get a note from his mom to be out that late. But two of the three of us are actually going to be watching the fights along with some other notables in the MMA DFS Twitter community. We're going to be getting together and watching some fights tomorrow. I'm looking forward to it.
Should probably take a picture of that at some point before
we got to do some live tweeting. We got to put some photos up.
Just know that if Danielle Taylor secures this knockout, my phone is going off. That's actually going to hit the mute button for a little while.
I don't blame you, man.
I'm just going to keep posting that picture I have of your face from a couple weeks ago over and over and over again.
All right. Guys, thank you again. Please subscribe to the RotoWire channel. Anybody you know at RotoWire, follow them on Twitter and tweet at them mercilessly that you want the Fight IQ guys on Sirius. Because you know what? It's time. It's time we got on Sirius Radio.
Yeah, what's that guy's name? Derek. What's his name? The guy that he's always on Sirius.
Derek Van Ripper.
Derek Van Ripper. Yeah, come on, Derek. Give us 5 minutes on Roto on Sirius. You know, let us get on for the Conor fight. Get us on for when Conor fights Khabib. Get us on for 5 minutes so we could give our analysis for that fight. Come on.
I think that is a great idea. Yeah. So, I got to find his Twitter. We'll start hitting him up next time. But, guys, if you're on it.
Jake, Peter, you know, the ownership, get us on, Sirius.
That's right. It is an internal – I wouldn't call it a mutiny, but we – it's the contract negotiation. I can't even say it with a straight face. I do think MMA is growing, and we got Connor. So, guys, that's your homework assignment for the next 3 weeks.
I will sacrifice my monthly paycheck from RotoWire to get on Sirius.
And on that note – guys, do all that stuff. We appreciate you. Guys, it was fun as always. I'll see you in 3 weeks. Well, Joe, I'll see you Saturday. But
see you tomorrow, man.
I will see you in 3 weeks.
Take care.